Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren. Today we are talking with an author. So, Mac Little, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. I'm always confused nowadays. I think I'm just getting old, but there's so many genres of writing and things. How would you classify your writing?
Well, I really don't fit into any one genre. I try to take an overall picture of whatever book I'm writing. I write horror, and I write romance, and I write history, and I tend to combine them all in my stories.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant, you know, because I wasn't sure if I should call you a historical fiction or like a romance or a horror author, because it's sort of a little bit of all of it.
Yeah, the common thread I've found in all of my novels is the history. I love finding interesting tidbits in history that's been left out. And even in my horror novels, I spent a great deal like in ancient times and studying, you know, what life was like back then and, you know, what the culture was. So actually that led me into writing my historical romance. Was I was writing a horror series and I kept going back to the history, and I realized I want to do a whole book where I just really immerse myself in a historical period.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's really important that you get a lot of historical facts correct. Mm-hmm. Yet you still have a fictional story going over it.
Right. Fortunately, I have a background in librarianship, so I'm a great researcher. I can really dig deep. So when approaching a story, I usually start with the character and their background, and then when I find the historical period I want to place them in, I study the events that are going on in that part of the world. And I try to figure out how my character would react to that situation. So it all starts with character. And then once I have a time period, I just try to have my character interact with whatever's going on there.
So you've got a time period and you've got the events going on, and then you put your character in there. Do you set them on a quest, or do you have a question that they're sort of trying to figure out, like something about their time period?
No, it's not really a quest. It's them just trying to live their lives. And when they come into contact with each other, how they react, basically, when I start a story, I don't really have a plan for what they're going to do. They tell me what they're going to do. I have a general plan where I want to, let's see, the last novel I wrote, Daughter of Hades. I knew I wanted to write a romance novel with pirates that showcase the Maroons, the escaped slaves in the islands. And so I wanted a main character that was brave and forthright. And so, let's see. So I looked at the history of Jamaica and the history of the Maroons. And I was like, oh my God, I could see my characters moving through these events. And that's how I do it. I look at the history, and then I see how my characters are going to interact with the events that are going on.
Wow. So that leads me to, so your characters kind of direct where they're going to go or how they're going to react, I guess, and kind of where the story goes.
Absolutely.
So what is your relationship with these characters? And I'm not saying that flippantly. It's just that we get so many writers that will give a description of their characters, and they'll say, oh, it's like my family, it's like my kids, it's like I hear all of these things, and and also, you know, not only who they are or what they are to you, but how do you experience them? Is it a visual thing? Is it an audio thing? Do you hear voices? Like, where does this all work for you?
Yeah, and it's all of those things. My characters are a part of me. I guess the closest analogy would be a child, because they have my DNA. Even in all of my characters, they have a part of my DNA, a part of my personality, a part of something. And so they're intimate creations, just like a child might be. And when I interact with them, they talk to me. It's like I go on walks frequently, or whenever, actually, when I'm not writing, you know, they're talking to me. They're having their conversations, and I'm thinking about the story, and I go, oh no, you know, you forgot to say, you know, this, and you forgot this reaction, and that they're a part of me, is best I could say.
Well, are they like,
make any sense?
Yeah, no, I heard all, so are they just like regular kids where they will do what they want? They won't listen to you?
Yes, I have an idea of where I want the story to go, but once I start writing the scene, they just take off and do whatever, and then I'm having to catch up with, you know, figure out, you know, how do I make the story work, even though this is what they decided to do. Yes, they are like working with naughty kids.
Yeah, that's teenagers. Now, I would imagine the setting is important to you as well. So like where you're located. Now, I would also think that you might write the setting or the location as a character too.
Yeah, I suppose it's very important to get the details right of the setting. And a lot of times the characters are interacting, when there's a lot of action going on around them, then yes, the setting does become a bit of the character, but a lot of times it's just painting a picture, trying to write what I see in my mind or what I imagine, and trying to make that picture as accurate as I can. And a lot of times that means picking out specific details. And a lot of times with the settings, all you need to do is pick out like two or three or four, you know, specifics, especially when writing a historical novel. You pick out a few specific details, and then you color in around those. It's so weird talking about the creative process, but but basically my settings are pictures. I'm painting pictures.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're not waking up in the morning and finding, you know, mud on your shoes and blood on your hands, are you? Voices aren't telling you to do this weird stuff.
No, I know it sounds psychotic. I know how it sounds, but no, and actually writing keeps me sane, I think, because the voices just, you know, get so loud and insistent. I have to write and get them out of my head.
Yeah. I think there's medicine for that too. but I, you know, hey, just what I'm just trying to help. Well, you know, I have to imagine that a lot of you goes into the characters. You were talking about how they are kind of intimate creations. So there's got to be a certain amount in each character that is sort of you,
yeah, you know?
And absolutely. So when that is, do you ever sort of worry about, let's say, you know, being vulnerable a little bit, letting your own emotions or feelings towards certain things be exposed to everyone in the world?
Yes. Yes. I do feel very vulnerable at times, especially with the romance side of things. And I don't like being emotional as a person. I don't I just don't like being emotional. It embarrasses me. And so when I write my characters being emotional or expressing emotion, I'm having to capture that so that the reader can understand and empathize with the character. So when I write that emotional stuff, it's embarrassing to me. And I present to a critique group, you know, and get feedback on. And when I have to read the emotional parts of my story, it is so cringy, yeah, and embarrassing to me.
Yeah, it is. It's a hard thing to deal with. That's why, mm-hmm, I always ask people, because I want to, yeah, you know, it's a very hard part, especially in today's world. Today's more than anything, because you're so much more out in the public and with social media and all of that stuff. And people can, they have more access to you now, yes, than they would have even 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it kind of puts you in that spot where people could throw tomatoes at you, basically.
Exactly. And I try to keep myself out of the social media as much as I can. I distance my personal life from it and just, you know, go with the memes and stuff I think is funny,
yeah,
or weird,
yeah,
or strange. I don't put, because I don't like putting myself out there like that. And I guess in my books, that's my venue for that. And I get past the embarrassment and the cringing after I present it to my critique group.
Yeah.
So it's out there now. And so once it goes out to the masses, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
They're the characters are themselves now. They're like, you know.
Yeah, let them deal with it. Do you ever use people you know as characters in books?
No, not really. They're I would like to. You hear about authors putting people in their stories so they could kill them off or torture them. As I can't do that.
Well, you do that because, with the critique group, you know, when someone said something bad about
it. I can't do that. Here's the thing about writing my characters is that, first of all, they're a part of me. When I write a character, I have to research them and get to know them. And therefore, I start to feel compassion for them. And if I put someone I didn't like in there, it would be like therapeutic anyway. It will help me to understand this person and to love them and not want to kill them. So when people say stuff like creating characters so they can kill them and, you know, as a proxy for someone else, that doesn't work for me. Because if I start writing about a character or person or place, I start to feel familiar with them and compassion, and I learn to love them. You know, even my bad guys, I love them. I recently had a bad guy that I had to kill off, and it killed me. I did not want to do it. And I presented to my critique group and said, help me, guys, help me save him. They're like, no, he needed to die.
Well, you know, bring him back in the future.
Yeah, that's what they said. That was their consolation.
Yeah, it was just a dream. It wasn't real, you know.
Don't you hate that?
Yeah. Well, you know, but with your characters being in such control in a way, and that, like, for instance, your daughter of Hades, that's book one. So there's a planned series here. Mm-hmm. So are you a person that doesn't outline then because of the characters, or do you sort of outline?
No, I don't outline at all. It's pointless. The best I can do is to do I do detailed character sheets. So, you know, I have an intimate knowledge of my characters, and then I write scene by scene. And I kind of map out where I want the scene to go. But 9 times out of 10, that scene goes somewhere else completely. So, I'm completely suit of my pants. And a lot of my research beyond finding a place and time, a setting for my characters, I do that by the seat of my pants too, as I'm writing. So my process, if you care, is I write longhand, and those are broad notes, broad brush strokes. And then, I type it up. And then as I type it, then I get into the details and research and try to make it, as accurate as I can. And then revise.
Yeah. So in a way, so Daughter of Hades, you don't know how many books you're going to do and where it's really going to end.
I have an idea. Okay. So when I started Daughter of Hades, I wanted to start with the invasion of Jamaica by the British. And I wanted to follow two main stories, two main characters, Ami and Pax, their love story. That was my idea in the beginning. But their story is so long, and I only have a finite amount of space I can write my books, right?
Yeah.
So I had to turn to other characters and focus on their romance, and put Pax and Ami in the background and have their love story arc over the whole thing. I'm planning only 3, but as I write, I find interesting characters that take me off in a tangent and makes my book way too long. So I have to cut that. And then, so this happened in the last book. One of my characters, Badu, he came from Africa. He is he has a privileged position on a plantation. And I got really deep into his backstory, and my publisher says, no, we're going off on a tangent. So I had to write a novella about him and his life in pre-colonial Africa and his escape from the plantation that he's on in Barbados. So I started out with just one story, and it just kept multiplying like tribbles. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, and so when you're putting this together, so you got the location, you kind of got what the time period, what's going on, the events, you put your characters in there. Now, is there a subtext or a plot that you want people to take away from the book besides the entertainment or the romance and all that stuff going on the surface? Is there something underneath it that you want people to take away from the book? And that might even, whether it's planned or maybe it just happened organically, is there something you're trying to tell us?
Well, I know a lot of people roll their eyes when I say that Blacks and people of color have been left out of a lot of the history that we've been learning. And with that's one of my main goals, is to reveal where people of color did actually exist, and they were painted out of the picture. So I guess basically that's my motive, I suppose. My underlying motive is to show the diversity of the period and show the diversity in history and how people interacted, how they got along a lot of the times and how they didn't. And I try to write it with truth and not sugarcoat anything, which is weird when I'm writing a romance novel. I hate I hate that flowery romantic crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I like to keep it real, but emotional.
Do you think that the public and even a lot of how it's been written, like the history, gets the place of Blacks wrong then? Do you think they're just misrepresented in a lot of history?
Yes. My biggest thing is, especially when you talk about slavery and you have books set during a period where slavery was at its height, you talk about Blacks as if there were nothing but slaves. They're objectified, and the slave, you have the slave, they're objectified and they're not seen as people. So what I want to do is show that these people, they're enslaved mathematicians, they're enslaved kings, they're enslaved mothers and fathers. I try to bring humanity to them and show that they did not begin as a slave. And they didn't end as a slave. There's this humanity that's been written out of these people's experience. And even though I want to write a romance novel, I want to honor my ancestors by telling the truth about, you know, what they endured, even though it's not the focus. But I want these people to be seen as humans, individuals with regency in their life.
Yeah, like they're full three-dimensional characters. They have feelings, exactly. They have likes, exactly. And dislikes, and they have things and their own relationships. And yeah, and I noticed that a lot. Like, I'm a Canadian boy, so a lot of the American television that I've seen, in the especially older stuff and media, it sort of displays minorities, period. Doesn't matter, where or whoever they're from, as two-dimensional. They're very generic
character. Yeah, were used as a prop.
Yeah, it's generic. You know, there's no depth to them. They don't show any depth, as if they didn't have any, which is kind of an unusual way to present people. It was a bizarre time, I guess. But you grew up in the deep South, they say. From a guy way up north, what do you think gets misrepresented about being in the deep South?
The way in the community I grew up in, there was a race thing, but not really, because I grew up in the smallest county in Georgia. And everybody knew everybody else, whites and blacks, you know, they had their separation, but they also interacted with each other intimately. Like, I did my genealogy, and it turned out that one of my cousins, unbeknownst, he passed as white, but we have a common ancestor. And he was basically the first white judge in Rockdale County. And there's always, under the surface, we were all really connected and interacting, even though there were Jim Crow barriers there. And now that I'm gone, it's like a little metropolitan area where it's like Anytown USA in Atlanta. It's Anytown USA. So I think that's what a lot of people get wrong, is how intimately we were connected beneath the surface there, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, and because you obviously have a lot of yourself in your characters and your story, I guess a lot of your own experiences kind of get into that. And I noticed that you studied international politics, and you were in the Army service for quite a while. But so that's got to be used, those influences, but most surprising to me was that you were a co-author of The Disaster Planning, Know How to Do It book. So how did that happen? How do you get into that kind of a project?
Yeah, that was just me helping out with the book. As a librarian, when I was hired as a medical librarian, my primary job was the informatics side. And basically, I just researched and culled lists of disaster resources for librarians. So that was my contribution.
So you're ready at the end of the world then.
Yeah, right. And so, yeah, it's like, I'm like, I'll help out. I'll give you a list of resources or links and whatever. And then they just put my name on there.
Yeah.
And so now I have a credit.
Well, you know.
Is that terrible to pull back the curtain like that?
No, not at all. I've done the same myself. Not a disaster book, but I think we all work, you know, in that sort of way. It's good. It's kind of funny. Now you focus a lot on romance and relationships in here. Now you've also included, I guess you've found it important, not only to put heterosexual but also LGBTQ relationships in your book as well. Is there a particular reason for that?
My characters just told me who they loved, and so once I realized that this character wanted to be with that character, then I would go back and research and try to make it authentic and ring true, and not, you know, and not make it some stereotypical two-dimensional thing. I want to make them real, make their relationship as real as I could. So, yeah, basically the characters tell me who they are. Except for the main characters, I don't know who's going to get together
right
from the beginning.
But, you know, when you're dealing with something like 1700 Caribbean times, like your, or, you know, old periods of time, The gay part of the world certainly was not, a very accepted party, either. It was pretty, it was illegal.
Absolutely. And back then, people really didn't have this.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Identity as being gay or queer or LGBT, there was no word. I mean, there were words for them, but there was no culture around it. There was no identity. It was very much in the closet. And sometimes the relationships were situational, and basically, they didn't put labels on themselves. They knew who they loved. They knew who they wanted, but there was no label, no culture to whatever. So I don't give my characters labels. Like Yvonne is one of my characters. He grew up thinking he was heterosexual. He liked girls, but he also had an attraction to his best friend, and he fell in love with another guy. And so he doesn't think of himself as gay. He still thinks, well, maybe I'll fall down with a woman someday. And it's that. So that I don't label my characters because they don't have labels for themselves. But yeah. I just try to be authentic in their relationships with one another.
Yeah, and that's a tricky situation. I've written some true nonfiction books from characters 100 years ago that were involved in a gay relationship, but they, in their mindset, there was no such thing as a relationship.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at. I mean, so I'm glad to hear you confirm that.
Yeah, no, it's true. They actually, you would never consider yourself as, like nowadays, two men or two women can go, oh, we'll get married, we'll do this, we'll do that. They'll have all these plans and they'll plan a life together. Back then, there was no plan like that. You never even thought about that. It was just doing something that on the side that was considered bad or illegal.
Exactly. Yeah. But listen, have you heard about the metallotages? That was an interesting development that I found out about. In the early 1600s, and the colonies were just being populated. There weren't that many women there, and the French had sailors that were, you know, working in the Caribbean. They realized that the men were going to have same-sex relationships, and they actually codified it. Two men could enter into a contract called a metallotage, where they, you know, where it's basically a civil union between the same sex, and the men would designate who they would leave their belongings to. Sometimes they would use the contract to share a wife or to pass a wife on to their buddy, their sailing buddy. So I thought that was interesting, and it's something I definitely want to play with. So I have a novel idea where I have a polyamorous relationship where the metallotage is involved. So I don't know. Had you ever heard of that?
No, I've never come across that, but I only did one study for, there was a couple in Germany in the 20s, and at the same time, there was a couple in Chicago, and they both ended up committing murders, and both were convicted, but just the differences in the countries at the same time of their concept of what homosexuality was. It was quite different. In Germany, it was considered okay, especially in the Berlin area, where they had burlesques, and they didn't arrest transvestites, and they had actually already done a transsexual operation by that time. Mm. Whereas when you come to the same time in 1920s, Chicago, it was considered you were as bad as a killer already. That was severe crime to the Americans in Chicago. So it was just weird how the same exact same time period in two different parts of the world had a totally different reaction to the same type of couple. And their behavior, you know, drag queens in Berlin were given passes so that they wouldn't get arrested. And it became a real mecca in Berlin with cabarets and all of that, all these shows. And everybody that had any sort of money or was in a higher class all went to Berlin to see these shows because it was like the latest trend. Whereas in Chicago, you were being put in jail. You know, it was just a total no-no. It was complete opposite in the exact same time, you know. So I find those cases interesting. So I'll write about both of them and compare them, what they're going through, because they're, you know, they're both did bad things, but it wasn't about that. It was about the situation that they had. But it was funny because homosexuals in Germany were actually thinking that they could actually move in with the same sex partner in a flat and live together. And in the US, it wasn't even a consideration. That just wouldn't happen.
Wow.
You'd go to some, you know, underground place and meet up type thing. And it was made very, I don't know, I don't want to say dirty, but very, very quick, dark, sexual, hidden sort of naughty.
Taboo.
Yeah. Whereas it was becoming kind of a cool thing in Berlin. It was just, I just found it fascinating.
That is fascinating.
You know, and, but again, you know, that's kind of the world we live in. So I think that's really interesting. You covered that. I think that's great. Especially because it sounds like you're really going into detail. You're putting real characters. It's just not this.
Exactly. They existed. And a lot of times, you know, people want to erase the people in the margins who actually existed. I want to shine a light on them.
Yeah, it's kind of strange that happens a lot. That why people want to, you know, it could be more about the embarrassment, or maybe they know it was wrong, so it's better to forget it than to talk about it.
Forget it, gloss over it.
Like it never happened, you know. So if we don't, because then we're not.
I get that.
Yeah, because you're not, you know, people don't want to have to engage in something like that because it makes them feel bad. You know, it might be something their grandparents or somebody in their past did. So it's really not their fault, but it's still something that people don't want to own necessarily, you know.
Right. And also, maybe it's just not important to them, or they're just, I think a lot of times people are just lazy and they don't want to do the due diligence.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
because, yeah. You know, a lot of work is written for is it the white male gaze? It is written toward them and what's important to them. It's really, I don't think.
Well, I'll tell you, no, a lot of it's
of marginal populations are important enough to.
Well, not only that, they're written by people that don't experience it.
Yeah.
And that's the issue, because if you've never experienced it, you never lived it, you never dealt with it, and yet you put yourself into that place and you go, I'm going to write this story about these two guys, but you've never been through it. You're just sort of, you're writing it from a straight male, white male sort of point of view. You're not writing it from the gay point of view because you hadn't actually lived it. Because it's more than just two dimensions. It's not just Will and Grace. It's not
right.
There's so many normal people that have everything's normal about them and they just live. And you know, the gay is just one thing. And it's funny how a lot of the writers will be writing it from their own perspective, outside looking in, and that's never going to be a very good character analysis. It's going to be okay at times, but it's really not going to cover it. And
right, and at you have to remember, at the heart of it is they're human. What you want to do is tap into their humanity. I'm a Black woman. I don't go around all day thinking about, oh, I'm a Black woman. This is how I suffer. I think about what I'm going to eat for lunch and, you know, what time my husband's going to get home from work. That's not what I think about. And I don't cry about being Black all the time. And I'm tired of reading about these stories that are just, you know, Black pain narratives, because that's not how most Black people live our life. We just live our lives as human beings. And if you read my books, I write from the point of view of gay white males. I write from the point of view of straight white males. I write from the point of view of white females. And the characters work because I tap into their humanity and not, you know, and try not to,
Well, I know what you're saying.
You know, get out of my depth as far as cultural baggage goes.
Yeah. Cause people relate on other things other than their color or their sexuality or what, you know, things like that. There's so much more to life. Well, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, there of course.
Is, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I you know, but what do I know? well, it's interesting, but so in a way it's really kind of a full range book and I wonder, so do you plan on just kind of going down this alley, you know, the same type of writing for the next few years? Like in 10 years, are you going to be doing kind of this style, or do you think you want to try something different as well?
I think I want to try something different, but right now I'm writing this historical romance series, and I can see four novels coming out of it easily and a multitude of novellas coming out of it. I can see myself writing that. I'm also at the same time writing a horror series called The Science of Darkness with a vampire hunter. And I've already have like 4 books planned for that, and it could go on forever too. But in the back of my head, I have a fantasy series that I like to write before, you know, I get too old and lose my mind.
Well, if voices are talking to you, you've already done that. So you've lost the mind a while ago. So age is just, it doesn't matter, right? You're either here or you're not. So believe me. I'm turning 60. So it's just, it goes so fast that,
I know it does. I'm 53 and I'm like, oh no, I'm going to die soon.
Yeah, I've had that since I turned 50. I've been doing that. I've been trying to write like as much as I can every year, because there's only so much time left.
Yes.
And it's kind of a bad way of doing it in a sense, this urgency, because who knows, maybe I'll be a 90-year-old thing, you know, groping around, but who knows. But when you do the horror, are you kind of a traditional horror writer? Are you into is it kind of gory and scary and brutal, or are you more into suspense and terror of the mind?
Gory and brutal and gritty. And if you read my romance novel, it's kind of like a horror novel too, because I get really gritty and, you know, I like to tear people apart.
Oh, so you're saying romance is really like horror.
Well, you know, it can be if you come in at the right angle. I mean, if you talk about pirates, you know, and you have ship battles and evil villains, and especially with slavery, it's easy to go down the horror path. It's easy. So that's what I do in my vampire series. I get gory and I get romantic. There's like a huge romance at the center of that. It all conflates, you know, with each other. But if you have vampires, I guess you have to call it horror.
Yeah. Well, you know, and so your husband's okay, right? Like he's still... Like he's checking here, you know. I mean, he's
yeah.
You know, he's not in the basement somewhere tied up or something, is he? I just want to make sure that.
Hey, now that's an idea.
Well, that's an idea. You know, he's down there, and you.
You mean I can do that?
You know, have at her. I give you permission. Go for it. Go for it, and write about it. Make sure you write it. Write the details so that we know exactly what happens. You know, make sure you question him about the amount of pain he's in.
How does this feel?
Yeah.
Does this hurt?
Yeah, because you see, then, you know, describe this pain to me, and then you can get. Then it'll be a really engaging book. You know, that's important.
But you know, I do get his point of view. You know, I do interview him like with sex, like sometimes when I'm writing a sex scene from a guy's point of view, you know, I ask him, well, what are you feeling? Or what does that feel like? And, you know, why do you do that? And I really dissect it. And he's game. So.
Well, you know, he's game because he tied up from his feet down in the basement. And you got a stick and you're asking him questions. Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't have much choice if he wants to eat.
Yeah.
I'll feed you if you answer. Yeah.
Tell me the truth and you'll go free.
Yeah. Yeah. And it never happens. You can always get another husband if he doesn't make it, right? You know.
Or I can get another husband and put him in the basement to keep my husband company.
Yeah, there you go. Now
I wouldn't want to get lonely down there.
No, you yeah, that's very kind of you. Very compassionate. Yes. Very
compassionately insane.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, that's great. People can avoid you in the streets. So now what is your means of communication with readers? So if you've got fans, do you have a website? Do you have, let's see, what's your favorite social media that fans and readers can find you at?
Well, on Twitter and on Instagram, I am Zen Baby, ZenBaby, IE. And that's my handle. And you can find me on Facebook at Author Mac Little, AUTHOR Mac Little. And I love talking and discussing my books. And if you have any questions or complaints, I'd love to hear it and talk about it.
Yeah, you know, complaints, go for it. She'll slice you like a pirate.
Complaints are awesome because, you know, I have heard where, you know, some people think I got it wrong as far as African religions and, you know, it, and I'm glad to hear it so I can hone my research and my characters and whatever. So yeah, it's always helpful.
Yeah, no, it's good. And website?
My website is mack-little.com, mack-little.com.
Great. Of course, now we're going to have everything on our website and people can find you with one click if they can't spell it or can't remember. Political correctness. When you're writing in history, and I always ask historical writers, fiction or nonfiction, do you concern yourself with trying to be trigger proof for today's reader, or said in a way that is more, let's say, politically correct or more acceptable in these times? Because a lot of people in 1700s, 1800s, even the 1900s. Treated other people like blacks, gays, and everything with total disrespect and awful, awful language.
Well, yeah. Well, no, I try to be accurate, you know, the way people talked and thought during that time. But as a narrator, you know, I am sensitive about the correct terms. And also, I have intent when I'm naming certain things, like as a narrator, I don't call slaves. They are enslaved people, enslaved women, enslaved men, because that's how I think these people should be thought about. So I guess that's politically correct. But when the characters interact with each other, then they carry with them the same mindset that, you know, a person of that time period would. So I had one of my characters was raped and two other characters were discussing it, two guys. I go, yeah, well, she deserved it. You know, she shouldn't have whatever. And, or, you know, she got in trouble for killing her rapist and she deserves to die for that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
It is really hard to believe sometimes how people acted in a different generation. And it's hard to get your mind about, because like, yeah, we're almost the same age, but I remember growing up, but again, Canada, we had different issues, but I remember growing up and seeing the way my parents did things and thinking, wow, that's crazy. And we kind of brought it forward somewhat more, and each generation sort of does that. But it's really amazing to see how people were treated. Let's say even 100 years ago, you just can kind of go, but why? Like, that's just crazy.
Yeah. I saw the way women were treated when I was growing up, and I was like, there's no way I would get married or put myself through that.
Yeah. Or you keep him in the basement, right? We know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, the expectations that females had when I was small were bleak.
Yeah. Well, it is amazing, too, because when you look at people that, you know, that Gloria Steinem and people that were trying to move women's rights forward, they're considered such evil people. And they're not. All they were trying to do is make things better, but they were so villainized for I guess breaking the norm, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing to me.
Yeah. That, you know, you go out and burn the bras in the 60s and then like, and it's just like, well, somebody has to put their foot down, somebody has to get hurt, which is too bad, but you know, and then how they get villainized, and I think, wow, these people didn't have to do that, and they did. And right? I don't know, but that's just.
Well, you know, when the status quo is disrupted, people get scared. And when they get scared, they get angry, you know, mean.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And well, speaking of that, how was the COVID for you on your writing? Did the last couple of years kind of throw? And I say that because, especially with you and dealing with characters, you sound like you're probably quite in tune with your characters and your writing and stuff. Well, but when there's outside stresses like what was going on, especially in the U.S., does it sort of make you unable
to be? Yeah. COVID was my groove, I tell you, because I never left the house anyway. I worked from home, and it just gave me an excuse to stay home more.
Right.
I thrived during the COVID.
Well, hey, there you go. Well, no, just some writers that were totally shut down because their emotions were so wrapped up in, you know, there's anti-mask rallies and all the conspiracies and Donald Trump and all this weird stuff going on.
I just watch that stuff and shake my head and go escape to my world.
Yeah. Well, no, that's the other thing. You know, I see, talk to writers and some go, oh, no, I totally just escaped and I was in my own doing their own thing and having a great time. And others were all shut down and rolling around on their bed wounded, you know, so it's just had two opposites. So, you know, it's interesting.
Like, I'm a total introvert. So, yeah, not having to be around people, that was awesome.
Oh, that's a great thing. I still hate people. Everyone knows it, you know. I just can stay with my dogs forever, you know. Mm-hmm. When they make us come back to the studio here, probably the fall this year, it's just going to be brutal. I'd rather be at home with my dog.
yeah
well, that's what we deal with. Well, it's been a really good conversation, and we're really glad you came on the show. Now the book we're talking about, your last book, as I see, is called Daughter of Hades. Now it's book one of the Love and Peace series, which we hope is going to come true. And our guest was the author, and Mac Little, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino movie reviews.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.